This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast with me, Darren Cullum, and this man, Richard Mellon.
Hello, Darren.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
Good. So, just to give a bit of sense of day, it is the day after the cup final, whereupon Arsenal won 3-2 against Hull in what can only be described as a great game of football. Rich was there.
I was there. I thoroughly enjoyed the day. And I was there, obviously, because I'm a bit of a gooner, and that's a known fact. But I was, more importantly, there supporting my mate, the referee.
Yeah, and a great performance from Lee as well.
It was a good performance. I think he gauged his involvement exactly right.
Now, we'll talk more about that a bit later on through the course of this episode. Thanks very much for listening. If you're a new listener, don't forget you can listen to us online at refereesworld.co.uk, or you can listen via your iPhone, your iPad, just by searching for Referees World on iTunes. Okay, as always, a busy old show. We're going to cram a whole load of stuff in, but we're going to start with some real positive news and another very close colleague who's been promoted once again.
He's been promoted, yeah. Kevin Johnson from Weston Supermare has made Football League Middle. He's now classified as Level 1. And we're going to talk to Kevin about his career, where he started from, and all the highlights and obviously a few lowlights. So we hope our listeners will sort of gain some inspiration from that.
Absolutely. And Kevin joins us now. Hello, Kev.
Hiya. How are you both?
Yeah, very well, thank you. The kids have been put to bed and you've now got a spare 20 minutes to sit and talk with us, which
that's
is great news.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Thank you very much for that. First of all, Kev, let me just say congratulations on getting your promotion, first of all.
Thank you very much.
Much
appreciate it.
What does it feel like when you get that call?
Oh, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable to receive the call that says that you finally got onto the Football League as a referee. Was just a magnificent feeling for me. So many years of hard work all came together in that one phone call.
I was going to say, how many years? Let's go right back to the very start. Perhaps you could sort of start where you began as a referee and how it all began for you.
Yeah, it started back a long time ago when I was at college, and my dad had enrolled in the course, took the course and passed. I did the same, so that's going back about 18 years ago now, probably, about 18, 19 years ago. And I took the course, as we all do, to earn a little bit of extra money whilst at college. And it's gone on from there. I started refereeing Saturday afternoons, and then it became Sunday mornings. I gave up playing and got promoted back into the old level three, as you like, and went up from there through the Southern League.
So you were originally playing, and you got to that point where you thought, hang on a minute, I'm actually quite enjoying this as a referee, so I'll quit the play and I'll get out there and I'll blow the whistle instead. Rich?
Yeah, Kev, let me talk about the non-refereeing side. What sort of player were you like?
Terrible. Most of us are. This is why we end up refereeing, I think.
Yeah, What was your position if you got on the field of play then?
I was always a starter because I played in not a very good team, so I was always the main man of a starter. Or was I manager? I can't remember. Yeah, it might have something to do with me starting. But no, I played at fullback, right back. That was my position.
I was going to say, knowing how tall you are, I would have expected you to be a fullback.
Yeah, that was my position. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Were you a fullback that could tackle though?
No. I was a fullback to make up numbers, I'm sure of it.
I'm just trying to get our listeners into the idea of what makes up the character of a referee.
Ex-player. Yeah, no, I mean, I very much enjoyed the game. I wasn't a bad player, but I was never, ever going to really progress as a player. And as I say, I was about 16 to 18, and I was enjoying playing, but I knew it wasn't going to go any further than the level that I was playing at. So once refereeing took a hold of me, and I really did enjoy it, I mean, that's the most important thing that I remember from all those years ago, is that I really did enjoy going out on a Saturday afternoon and refereeing. And then, as you do, you get promotion. You were a class three, you get promotion to a class two, and then, as I say, it is back in the day. So back
I was going to say, using the word class and class this and class that, we are going back a few years.
Back a few years. That's
rub
right.
it in a bit.
And once you get that refereeing bug of doing games and refereeing well and being recognised for refereeing well, it's good to be involved and carrying on. And before I knew it, I was refereeing on the Gloucestershire County League. And I was a Southern League linesman, so that's when it really sort of got hold of me, and that's when I gave up playing then.
Yeah. Kev, you said that the way you recruited onto a course was with your dad. Obviously, he was an influential part of your starting off the career. Yep. What other support have you had? I mean, family play a huge part, don't they?
Family are massive. I mean, my dad was very, very important to me early doors, was always giving me... advice and things, how to handle, because I was only a young lad, 18, so to go out there and referee men and that sort of thing, he would give me advice on how to deal with those kind of players and that kind of thing.
So he was instrumental
in the beginning.
He played the role of your mentor as well then?
Yeah, he did, definitely. And my mum, she used to be the one that used to be recruited to drive me to games every Saturday afternoon without fail. She would always drive me wherever I had to go. And then, quite funnily enough, her and my nan would then go off somewhere, because my nan would always tag along in order to drop me off. Then those two would go off somewhere and pick me up when I'd finished. So, again, they were very, very instrumental early doors.
Yeah.
And you need that support. And I know that Rich and I have talked about this a number of occasions on various other episodes. The support network that you get as a referee from family and friends is so vitally important for your career as a referee, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. I mean, my career, I would say, really has taken off in the last 6, 7, 8 years. And in my time since, I've been married to Rachel for coming up to 6 years now. But even when we first got together, she really, really, was supportive in everything that I wanted to achieve, and really was the inspiration behind pushing me on that little bit more that I needed. I'd been in the system for a long time. I hadn't really progressed as quickly as I would have liked. But, the support there to say, especially from your wife, to say, go on, you can do this.
Yeah, that's nice. That's
vitally important. And... there we are, sort of 6, 7, 8 years later. She was absolutely right. I could do it. And, there is a big thank you there to my wife, Rachel, because, as I say, she's the one that has to look after home when I'm travelling here, there and everywhere.
Yeah.
And it can be difficult at times, but it doesn't matter how difficult it is. She's always there to support what I do, so...
Kev, you said just now that you hadn't progressed as quickly and as far as you'd liked. Looking back now, what were the areas that you felt that you were letting yourself down on? Well, not letting yourself down on.
Yeah.
The areas that you felt that you could have done better at the time.
I think, if I'm honest, I think it was there was a lack of commitment and a lack of direction there, really. I didn't really fulfil my potential. I didn't see my potential, I don't think, at the time. I felt that, looking back, hindsight's a wonderful thing. You see yourself... refereeing week in, week out, and you've not really got any sense of direction. And over a period of time, it's fair to say I lost a little bit of belief in the goal that I was aiming for.
I'd like to wholesomely agree with you on there, because I was exactly the same, and I never really I never really had a lot of direction until I sort of got back on the leagues with Somerset FA and met Rich, really. And that's when it was a lot later in life than I could now look back and think, God, I wish it was done a lot earlier. I think, and that's going back to the whole mentoring thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's somebody who was very influential in my early part of the regeneration of Kevin Johnson, if you like, was obviously was a gentleman, Martin Cassidy. He was instrumental in my early part, and quite dedicated at times in order to get me promoted to panel referee. And he was, he was really helpful in kick-starting.
He's a very passionate and knowledgeable coach, isn't he?
Yes, very much so. Yeah. And he was, he knew that I was stuck in a rut, and he really wanted to push me on as much as he could, and he was influential, as I say, in the early part of my panel in getting me into panel refereeing, so conference national refereeing.
Yeah.
And once I was into that level, you know, I got that bug again, and I really wanted to push on and progress. Yeah. And
you said, Kev, you were stuck in a rut as Martin approached you. What areas, describe those ruts and how Martin actually got you out of those areas.
Yeah, I think the main thing was the length of time that I was 9 years as a sort of contributory league referee, Southern League referee, because I was there for the transition. So nine seasons down the line, and people that have run the line for you one season catch up with you the following season and go past you the season after. And I think that has had an effect on me, that would I ever break that cycle? Would I ever be as good as them? Well, the truth is, I had to believe that I was as good, if not as better than them, because those are the people that are going to overtake you, and you're going to have to overtake in time as well. So Martin instilled a lot of belief in myself as a referee. I mean, he would hound me on the telephone moments after I finished a game. He would hound me on the telephone, find out how it's gone. What have I done differently today? How can I progress for the next game? And as I say, the biggest rut was just literally that. It was just refereeing became mundane for me. And I needed that little kickstart, and I needed that spark again to start my career off again, really.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, mentoring and coaching and friends, because they all have a part to play for development. What do you think, as regards key assets for refereeing? And let's use the last 6 years. What have been those key assets and those areas that you've used in which has got you to this status of level one?
Yeah, I think commitment is a big one, Rich, to be honest with you. I think you really do have a lot of time spent travelling to and from games, lonely place refereeing sometimes, and you know, you're driving home from a big decision, you're waiting to know whether you've got it right or whether you've got it wrong. It's hard. You have to have a certain amount of commitment to progress to level one. You can't do it an easy way.
Yeah.
It has to be a lot of hard miles, a lot of listening, a lot of developing. I've picked up excellent advice throughout my panel career from colleagues such as Brian Baker to senior refereeing coach Steve Dunn.
Yeah.
You know, they really do care about what you're doing, and you know, they're trying to develop you. You've got to listen. That was the big thing. I had to listen, and I had to be willing to learn how to develop as a referee. Steve instilled into my game management, things like that. You know, things that I never really understood before I started working with Steve. And through his guidance, you know, he just slowly got it into me to understand more about the game and realise. I mean, I was card happy. I mean, I won't lie about it. I used to go out there, flash cards for fun, and it wasn't the way to do things, you know. So I had to sort of take a step back and calm down a bit, really. And
What about the mental toughness, Kev? How has that changed from the time when you started that you can remember until that day when you had the call that you were going to be level one Football League referee?
That's right, yeah. I mean, I think mentally, Rich, so easy to lose your way early doors. You know, you can have a good game and everything's fine, but what are you learning from that game? You know, you're not really learning a lot because it's gone well, and we can all fall into that trap of it's gone well, on we go to the next one, that sort of thing.
But complacency.
That's right, yeah. And I think the big thing now, especially in this last season, is it didn't matter if I was doing first versus second, or you know, a third versus fourth, a playoff game or a relegation battle, every game had to be treated the same for me. And that's been the big difference for me this season. There haven't been any slip-ups along the way, and in previous seasons the focus, the concentration may have just slid away slightly, and that's when you get bit, when you're not fully focused on every single game that you do. And that's one thing that I had to ensure that this season I would do. I remained focused for every single game, and it didn't matter what game it was. I had to approach it in the same way, and that's been a massive difference from the early part of my career to actually going through this last season without any hiccups, and that's been the biggest difference for me.
So what advice would you give to somebody listening to this right now in terms of how you mentally prepare for a game? And you've just said it yourself, going into every game, treating it with the utmost respect, you know, even though it may be a mid-table clash, perhaps, where there's nothing to play for, or even a top versus second, bottom versus the one above, that kind of thing.
That's right. I mean, every single game, that would be my big advice. If I was to mentor or to coach anybody from now on, the biggest thing I could say to them is that I don't like the cliche, every game is your cup final, but every game is vitally important to you. You have to give it the same level of dedication that you would give any game, whether it's, as I say, top versus bottom, first versus second. If you've got that middle of the turn, it still means a lot to the players that are playing in that game. And don't let the games that you think, oh, I can control that without any problem, because those are the games that will come back and bite you.
I was going to say, they're the ones where you let your guard down a bit slightly and they trip up and bite you on the bum.
They do. And as I say, I've had 3, 4, 5 seasons of that exact thing happening. You go out, as I say, you referee well one week, top first versus second, you're the best referee you could ever be, and you're over the moon. That next fixture comes out, middle of the table, you think, well, I've just done first versus second, dead easy, I'll go out and do this middle of the table game, and it won't be a problem. And before you know it, the game has gone away from you, and that game has gone away from you before you've even got to the game, because you're not mentally prepared, your attitude isn't right, and it's gone. You know, you have to be bang on the button every single game.
Kev, tell us about one of those situations that you're referring to, because in the back of my head, I can see the cogs working, and you've got a couple of match instances where you know that you perhaps weren't on top of it.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, I've got instances where I've given, you know, penalties that aren't penalties, I can't give you team names, but there's just so many instances. You know, I've missed a red card because, it can be managed. It's an easier option. You know, it's not necessarily games or in particular circumstances, but I know that there have been times over the years where even if I haven't been bitten by a big decision, my performance has let me down looking back. I mean, a lot of the marks that we get range from 8.0 through to 8.5, 8.6, those kind of things. So just to give you a scale, an idea. But those kind of games that I'm talking about might only be an 8.1 or an 8.2 for me. And if you're going to be getting promotion, you have to be on the money and you have to give every game 100% and turn those 8.2s into 8.3s. 8.3s into 8.4s. I'm sure you understand, Rich, where I'm coming from.
I understand exactly what you're saying, Kev.
And that's been the big difference. You know, there haven't been the 8.1s and the 8.2s. I've managed to turn them into 8.3s and 8.4s. And that's put me where I was in the merit table. And that's what got me my interview. And as I say, it's all about focus, concentration, and giving every game, you know, that 100% that it deserves.
Mm. The thing I was going to touch on, Kev, was, we all make decisions and it affects our marks. And a lot of our listeners will be saying, well, what are marks? What do they mean?
Mm.
They put a referee on a merit list. And the merit list for you as a nationalist and a match official, just give a brief explanation of when you talk about 8.1, 8.5, 8.6. Just a brief summary of how it's broken down and what it means, Kev.
Yeah, I think, basically 8.1, 8.2 is performance expected, and that's the standard expected, or just below the standard expected. You want to be looking at an 8.3, that is really standard game. Nothing much happened for you to lose marks to go 8.1, 8.2, nothing really to gain to push you into the 8.4, 8.5 bracket. If you then put in a performance, up and above the game, 8.4, 8.5 is where you're going to be looking to score your marks that are going to put you in the merit table and push you up through the merit table.
Okay, let's transfer that, say, back a step now to contributory. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about 8.1, 8.2, 8.3, whatever it may be. Those transfer into adequate marks as a contributory referee, level 3 or level mm-hmm. 4 supply league referee, around about that band mark banding of 70 to 73.
That's right, yeah.
And then we come back down towards our colleagues at level 5, 6s and 7s. That doesn't change within that marking range. Mm. So I just want listeners to understand that whilst we talk about professional game marking at 8.1 to 8.5 or whatever it may be, depending on the circumstances, then everybody is gauged on a merit list, but the systems are slightly different, and I just want the listeners to understand that if you get an 8.2 or an 8.3, mm-hmm. you're around about 70 to 74 on a contributory game or a supply league game or a referee looking for level 4 nominations.
So that's right,
I hope that explains to our listeners.
Yeah, that's right. And as I say, that's why you really want to be pushing on into your 74, 75, 76 bracket. You know, you give yourself every opportunity to push yourself into that kind of mark, and the only way you can do that is every game has to be at 100%.
Yeah. Kev, let's change the direction slightly here. And whilst we can celebrate together your promotion, and I want to, and at this time, talking to all our colleagues on the podcast, congratulations to everybody that's had a cup final or promotion this year. But in the opposite direction, Kev, mm-hmm. there's been disappointments in your career. Talk about a particular one that comes to mind, if you know of one.
I think it's happened to me twice over the last three seasons, really. Being top of the merit list and receiving that or making that one decision that will cost you. And again, I don't know what scales there is, but the 7-9, so I would imagine you're talking 60, 66 to 70, something like that,
yeah,
Rich.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, picking up that kind of mark, just one decision, and it's taken me from, as I say, first, second, third in the merit table, you know, dropping me outside of promotion places, and then not being mentally strong enough to bounce back from that. Mm. And as I say, it's happened to me, you know, three times, where I just haven't had that mental strength to bounce back from the disappointment of making those kind of errors. And
I was going to ask, how have you actually mentally dealt with that disappointment? What do you do when you come off the pitch and, you know, you feel comfortable and then you get in the car and you hear about reports about, or got something wrong, this, that and the other? What did the assessor say? I'm not so sure I understand him. How have you dealt with those moments? Because our listeners are interested in how they're going to progress.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is that we are referees, we are human beings, we will make mistakes, and I think that is the first point of bouncing back, is the realisation that errors will happen in a season, and you have to park it and move on very, very quickly, because your next game could be your best game. If you're able to park the last decision that's cost you a mark or two, if you can park that, the sooner you can park it, the better, because you can become the best referee and you can feel fantastic in that next game that you do. And they will balance themselves out. They will balance themselves out. The more you will get more correct than you will wrong, and you have to believe in that, and you have to believe that should you make an error, whilst it hurts, you have to have a sense of, I wouldn't say arrogance, but inner strength to just park it. It's happened, you know.
An inner determination, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, rich people will laugh. You will see a decision on the television, or you will hear about a decision, and you know, people will talk about a decision that they've seen, and it's very easy to sit back and people will have a little chuckle about the error that Kevin Johnson has made and such and such and such and such a game. But do you know what, Rich? What you've got to remember is those people, 9 times out of 10, want to be where you were. And that's the big thing to remember. And you were there and you made that decision at that moment under whatever pressure you were under. And if you got it wrong, That's what happens. That's life.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, you have to be able to just say, well, okay, park it, move on. And then you have to go back into your next game, Rich, and you have to say to yourself, right, I'm not going to let that happen again. And you learn from it. You learn from mistakes. You learn from, that's the best way to learn. It's
that's how referees develop.
That you make.
Yeah, that's how refereeing is developing, helping colleagues. We do make mistakes. We have to learn from them, and that's what makes us stronger mentally.
That's right. If you make a mistake because you were too narrow, your biggest mistake is being narrow the following week. You know, you need to push yourself that little bit extra to get, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 yards out to the left just to change that angle.
Having a better angle.
You can then go into the realms of your fitness. Are you fit enough to get those extra 5 yards to the left to get that angle? It's not about doing it once in a game, it's about doing it hundreds of times in a game.
And of course, the higher up the leagues you go, the more fine tooth the comb becomes, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, it does. And you're competing against people that want something as much as you do, if not more, you know, so it really does become a bottleneck. You go up, and the tougher it becomes, and that's why I'm incredibly proud of what's been achieved this week. I really am, and all the years of hard work, because it's easy for me to say now going into the season as a level one referee, wow, fantastic. But I think any listener that's going from any level, if you're wanting to progress, that you can do it with that same sort of attitude of pushing yourself as hard as you can and just taking those extra yards to make decisions and to make decisions.
It's about recognizing your desire, but using all your skills and ability to make it happen, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I've suffered setbacks along the way, but you know, as I say, I spent 9 years as a contributory league referee, and I had to get out of that level of refereeing to progress, and thankfully it happened. And you know, I spent 2 successful years as a panel referee. Then I suffered another 2 with injury, which were incredibly frustrating. But again, that's what happens, and that was down to my own personal fitness problems. And I had to look at myself a lot to make the changes. And I would hand on heart say that it's probably the last 12 to 24 months that I've been mentally, physically prepared to actually challenge the people that were at the top of the merit list and be in the mix in order to gain promotion. So, you know, it does take a lot of soul searching and looking in the mirror and, you know, like you said, Rich, that inner desire, that burning desire in order to progress.
Okay. Well, just before we end the podcast interview, Kev, what's been forwarded to you as regards making preparation for next season when you become a Football League referee?
Yeah, at the moment, the only thing we've received, we've got a new referee development day on the 7th of June, I believe, at Warwick University, meeting up with our coaches for the first time, Eddie Wolstenholme. And Richard Beebe.
Yeah, good bunch of lads.
Yeah, so we're going to be working with them for the first day. And to be honest, Rich, that's all they've said to us so far, is be there for that day, and then we'll go into more detail then about what's expected. But as we know, the fitness test increases.
What about your fitness preparations, Kev? What are you doing close season?
Yeah, close season. I'm actually in for a triathlon this summer.
So
I wanted to train on something different and focus on something different away from football.
Yeah.
Regardless of whatever happened, if I were to stay as a panel referee, or as I say, fortunately I moved on to look forward to the Football League as a referee this year.
Wow.
So I wanted to train for something different. So I've entered into a triathlon with a good friend of mine, Mark Russell. We are going to be doing that in order to get ourselves fit and just have a bit of fun whilst we're at it.
I think Kevin Williams over at Midsummer Norton, he's a triathlete as well.
Oh, right, okay. He's probably better than me.
He's been doing it for a while, and I know he's serious on his triathlon. And good luck to all those boys. And, mate, I mean, I would never have dreamt about doing triathlon for my personal fitness program, but what a good idea.
Yeah.
What a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I've stuck to training programs with the PGMOL sports scientist. Simon Brevik and Phil Hewitt over previous years.
Yeah.
And I approached Phil and Simon during the season to sort of say to them, you know, I was thinking of doing something different. I didn't want to get in trouble, if you like, for not following their protocol.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, both of them were really encouraging of the fact that, A, doing something different, as long as we're sending in data to them from heart rate monitoring,
etc. Oh, mate, that'll send them in all sorts of interesting information.
Certainly will, you know. There's going to be a bit of this and a bit of that, obviously swimming and the run and everything else like that.
Yeah.
So and the cycle, I'm really looking forward to it. It should be a challenge, and it should actually get me in good preparation for my fitness test, which is in early July. So
well, it's been brilliant to talk to you, Kevin. Again, from us, the boys in Somerset, I want to say to you, congratulations. We're so proud to have a level one referee in Somerset, and we hope you have a really, really enjoyable first season as a Football League referee and many more seasons after that.
Thank you very much, gents.
Yeah, really good luck, Kev. And thanks very much for talking to us.
That's great, no problem.
This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
And our thanks and best wishes to level one referee, Kevin Johnson. It's great to be able to say that, isn't it, to colleagues?
Absolutely. I mean, Kevin's been chasing this for a few seasons now, and I know he's been close. And, you know, well done to Kevin for all the hard work that he's put in, and his family supporting him, Rachel and the children, and his mum and dad have supported him. And that's the basics of every referee, you know, whether there's, we got our new referees starting off, you know, these 18-year-olds, the 16-year-old lads and lasses that are taking up the whistle, they all need a level of support. And as they mature and grow up, then they become a little bit more, what can one say, confident, fluent, and everything comes to be. But somewhere along the line, referee might not be for everybody, you know, but if you give it your all, And you find out that refereeing is not for you, then so be it. You know, that's how it happens.
And as Kevin touched on a couple of occasions, you know, if you do find yourself in that position where you're really, really a bit down on things, lack of confidence or whatever, just pick up the phone and speak to one of your colleagues, because there's about 30,000 of us floating around to have a chat with, isn't there? Let's be honest about it.
Absolutely. And like I say, I've got a network of friends right across the country, some good colleagues, senior colleagues, that if you don't know anybody who to speak to out there,
Get in touch with Rich.
Yeah, get in touch with me, and I'll put you in touch with somebody close to you in your locality. I can help in any way like that.
Rich has now become the Referees World podcast answer to Dear Deirdre from The Sun. Anyway, if you're a new listener, thank you very much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast this season, because obviously it's that time of the year where we're pretty much done now. We do have a World Cup to look forward to, so there's no doubt some podcasts on the way and some episodes about that. And if you want to know how to listen, dead simple, you can listen online, refereesworld.co.uk. Just follow us on Twitter as well, at Referees World, or search out iTunes, and that's how you can find us. So, as we mentioned right at the beginning of the show, yesterday, just to give you a bit of sense of day here, it's now Sunday evening at 8:05, and we're recording this the day after the FA Cup final, Arsenal v Hull. Rich was there as a guest of the referees. Lee Prober, a very close friend of yours. And you were lucky enough to be his guest on the day. First of all, how was it for the day?
The day, like the first day since I've met Lee, I met him in 1994, the day was like a roller coaster. It was absolutely fantastic ride. There was some lows, there were some highs. The lows for me, being an Arsenal fan, were being 2-0 down and thinking, oh my word, what's happening?
Yeah.
But when I look at it from the refereeing point of view, I just thought Lee caught the whole event exactly right.
Did you feel a sense of achievement yourself? Because obviously, you know, Lee looks up to you as a mentor, and you were there from day one for Lee, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, when Lee came across from the Isle of Wight, I never heard of Lee Prober before, but he came across from the Isle of Wight in 1994. He moved into Bridgewater, where I still live now, and I had a phone call from him. And I had this phone call from him, and he said...
At the time, you were the...
I was chairman of,
chairman,
of
that
Bridgewater
was it.
RA.
That was it, yeah.
And I had this phone call from this chap. He said, oh, I'm Lee Prober. Who are you? I said, I'm Richard Mellon. And he said, you're chairman of Bridgewater RA, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, can I join your RA? I said, yeah, of course you can. You can join any RA you want. I said, but he's come to Bridgewater. He wants to join our RA. And I was so pleased that we got a new member. Never knew what was going to happen. Mm. Never knew what was going to happen. But he said, he came to the first meeting and he said, so, you know, you're Bridgewater RA, you're Richard Mulling. What have advice you got for me? And I just said to him, know when to put your hand in your pocket and know when not to. And for me, in a strange, quirky way, I watched him yesterday referee the FA Cup final, and he did exactly what I was...
Took you back to the day of that phone
20
call.
Years ago. Yeah. 20 years ago, almost to the day. Yeah. You know, it's just one of those proud, emotional feelings, yeah. You know, and like I say, lots of tears, you know, for the appointment. We've had lots of, you know, the journey that we've had as friends, as well as colleagues, is just so emotional, because if people didn't know, I was his best man at his wedding as well. And when he and Mel got married on that special day in June, 7 years ago now, that was probably the best day that I can remember. As friends and that, and yesterday was very, very close to it as FA Cup final, but you know,
you're welling up now, mate. Aren't
I
you?
I am now. It was yesterday. About this time yesterday, just 24 hours ago, we were in Wembley. We were watching the celebrations of Arsenal, who have been my football team for many years since a boy, but. The end of the day, I'm a fair-minded football fan, and I thought Hull City on the day were absolutely the magic of the FA Cup for me. That they came there, they played, they had a game plan, and they set it out, and they got their rewards for their game plan, and it went according to plan, I suppose. Until obviously
they were very good, they were strong.
Yeah, until they conceded. You know, and
is quite often the case with the underdog teams, isn't it? They grasp their moment, and then as soon as something comes back at them, that's when the panic sets in a bit.
Yeah,
which again. Clear to see it sort of happened.
There were a couple of times yesterday when people, you know, I'd got home late last night and tried to catch a little bit of match of the day or whatever was on last evening doing the FA Cup final. And I caught a little bit of the punditry by Andrew Townsend and another person I can't remember off the top of my head. And they were talking about, as the pundits will do, as the TV does, looks for incidents to sort of find fault with the match official's performance. If I'm looking at Lee's performance as an assessor...
That was going to be one of my questions. Now, putting aside the fact that you are close friends, what did you think of his performance, bearing in mind it was the FA Cup final and, you know, all else considered?
Okay, I don't think he made a mistake, but... I think there are areas that could have been better.
So
technically better.
Okay. So some might disagree with that and I'm not disagreeing. I'm just going through what I saw on the TV. And that was the corner that was given that perhaps should have been a goal kick after, which then obviously led to the goal.
Okay.
I think it was the second goal, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes. It's from the corner kick. Mm. Now I'll go back to grassroots here and I'll look at it from a grassroots perspective. At grassroots, we don't have TV, we don't have replays, and therefore, using that analogy, I think he had a perfect game. But, no, I won't say perfect game because that's not right, because I've still got development points for him. You know, technically, I'd like to have seen him done things a little bit better.
Lee, Rich is after you, mate. He's coming to get you.
But like I say, technically, he could have done a couple of things better. And I don't think it would be right to announce those over the podcast because that's not for me to say. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to cause any gossip. But like I say, I'll stick up and I'll say what exactly was played on the TV as regards the first Arsenal goal scored from a free kick. An absolutely
free kick all the way.
It was a free kick.
Yeah, absolutely. Free kick all the way.
It was a foul from behind. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, arguably someone would say, that was a free kick and a caution. Well, you know, looking at the occasion, the free kick was given. That's correct in my view. Did he have to caution the player? Could have. Should have? I'm not so sure about that. But could have, maybe. But he wants to gauge his level of involvement. Look at the spectacle of the FA Cup final. It goes to millions and millions and millions of people around the world. I was talking to Lee the other day, and he was talking to a couple of players who are overseas players, and they said, how important is it, or this is Lee's version, how important is it, the FA Cup in Egypt? And one of the players turned around and he said, oh, 10 million people will watch it in Egypt. Now, if there's 10 million people in Egypt watching the FA Cup final, imagine if you transfer that information around the world, how many millions are watching it actually? And I suppose there is a figure. Someone knows it.
You're well over 100 million, I would say.
And for the occasion, I mean, for those referees that say, oh, that's a caution, why didn't he caution? Manage the occasion. And that's what Lee was conscious of doing. Managing the occasion and not being the centre of attention.
That was what a lot of the commentary was. I listened to a lot of it on the radio, and you know, they were very positive in their commentary, saying that, you know, he's holding off the cards. You can see him holding off the cards, holding off the cards. Yeah. And then you get to a point in the game where, right, I've got to deal with it. And yes. I think the timing was brilliant. The timing was absolutely brilliant.
That's my point. That's been what I was saying. I mean, there was a challenge early in the game. I think it was on the right fullback, Bakary Sagna. I think it was on him, or he made the challenge. He was involved in it somewhere. And I thought, oh, you know, we could have a little bit of business here for the referee. But he decided not to caution for it. And when you look at his game management, it was probably right. You know, we talked to our level seven colleagues, level six, level fives, about manage the technical and hit the physical. Don't allow the physical to go unpunished. But when you go up to the higher scales in football, or higher levels in football, you've got to sort of manage the occasion. And I just thought, on those few instances early in the game and going towards the middle of the first half, I thought he caught it exactly right, because he was conscious about not being centre of attention. And we talked about this so many times over the years. And I know he would have talked to the referees committee, his coaches, the PGMO, and they would be mindful about gauging a level of involvement, which is what's expected. And that's what I thought he did. For me, that's what, you know, I thought he caught exactly right. And then when he delivered the first caution, you could sense that the referee's tolerance, look, this has gone too far. I'm now going to take some action. And the first caution came out, and other cautions came after that. But imagine if Lee had gone to that FA Cup final and had cautioned after 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 25 minutes, would he have started sending off players in the second half? He would have had no option, and he would have applied it, because that's the strength of him as regards the competencies he's refereeing at. He would have not deviated from his duties. If he had had to have sent off, then I'm sure he would have. I believe in him to that extent. But he needed to manage those early challenges, which I think he caught exactly right, you know.
At what point did you speak to him after the game?
It was, I can't remember what time we left Wembley, but I got home midnight last night. Briefly spoke to him before, in between the after-match sort of relaxation. He had his shower. He briefly went up to the Wembley suite where all the dignitaries were waiting and the councillors were waiting to congratulate him and acknowledge his performance. And then we briefly caught time with him for about 2 minutes afterwards. We literally had two minutes, and we were all in tears. We were enjoying it. You know, we'd had our. It was such a fantastic day, and everybody played a part. The fans played a part. Whole city were for me. Their fans were so. They were kind, generous, optimistic, realistic. In the end, I never saw any nuisance factor, any inconveniences. And the Arsenal fans, they didn't appear to be rude or anything like that. That they were, I think, relieved, you know. And 3-2 in extra time, when I think it was Koscielny, or was it Mertesacker, slipped and in nipped the whole city forward and flashed it across the goal, because Fabianski had come out and challenged him. I thought, oh, you know.
That was close.
The hearts of all the Arsenal fans in that stadium and around the world must have stopped at that moment when the ball went across the line and Kieran Gibbs didn't touch it and it went out for a goal kick. You know, I mean, such an occasion. And for me, the whole occasion, okay, my friend refereed it, but the whole occasion was absolutely fantastically managed from the FA's point of view. And I'm not speaking on behalf of the FA, but I'm just stating an opinion here. I thought it was absolutely first class, and I defy anybody to beat it. You know, fantastic memories. And my son, he's an Arsenal fan. He came with me. He wasn't an embarrassment, despite what his mum says.
No, but his dad was.
yeah, absolutely wonderful day.
This is Referees World. Listen online at refereesworld.co.uk or search iTunes for Referees World.
It's the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon. Thanks very much for listening today. Hopefully you've picked up some real insights as to what it's like if you're going to be going for that level of promotion, as our guest on the phone, Kevin Johnson, did. So, Kevin, thanks once again for your time. Good luck, Jono, in the new season. And obviously, hearing Richard's emotion at being in the FA Cup final with his very, very close friend, Lee Probert, refereeing as well. Genuinely, Rich, you were quite welling up there just talking about it.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's a lovely feeling.
Yeah, of course it is. So, still to come then. The season may well be over, but we do have World Cup to look forward to. So, I'm sensing a pre-World Cup podcast episode coming soon, Rich.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. We'll talk about the World Cup, hopes, aspirations, look at the match officials, our colleagues, Howard Webb, Mike Malarkey and Darren Cann. We wish them all the best from the English lads. Also, don't forget all our other colleagues from around the world. I'd just like to say, go out there, show them the business, and I'm sure everybody will enjoy the occasion.
And of course, if you have any questions for us, and as Rich was saying earlier on through the course of this episode, if you're a bit confused or on a bit of a downer about something, you want to speak to somebody, get in touch with us through the website. Yeah. And that's refereesworld.co.uk or indeed on Twitter @refereesworld.
This is the Referees World podcast.